You're listening to Out of Bounds with Daily Bruin Sports here on UCLAradio.com. Daily Bruin Sports is your ultimate source for UCLA athletics, and Out of Bounds provides you with an in-depth look at the UCLA sports scene like nobody else can. Here are your hosts, Andrew Erickson, Kevin Bowman, and Jason Dranch.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Out of Bounds with Daily Bruin Sports here on UCLAradio.com. I am Daily Bruin Sports senior staffer and football beat writer Andrew Erickson.
And I am Daily Bruin Sports editor Kevin Bowman.
Kevin, I know Breaking Bad is in its most exciting moment. It's reached its climax. We only have two episodes left here, but I've informed you before the show that if you spoil anything to me, I'm going to slap you square.
It was pretty crazy when Gus came back to life and then just started killing everyone. I don't know. You missed a good episode.
We're no longer in speaking terms, so we might as well end the show right now. But anyway, I guess just to, for the sake of the show, I have to talk to you. We'll get into our Westwood Week in review because we have a lot of football to talk about here. But I think it's important that we talk about all UCLA sports because I think we took last week off in light of the tragedy regarding Nick Pasquale. So. Let's get to it. Men's soccer notched two wins over the weekend, beating UC Santa Barbara, the Gauchos, 1-0 on Friday, and San Diego 2-1 in overtime on Sunday. The game against San Diego was a rematch of UCLA's second-round game in last year's NCAA tournament when San Diego upset UCLA to end its season. And I believe the Toreros won big time in that one.
Yeah, it was like 4-1, I want to say. It was the most goals UCLA gave up all season, and pretty ugly way to end their season, especially because San Diego wasn't even ranked, or they weren't even seeded. They had to have a playoff game just to get into the NCAA tournament, so it was a rough end of the season. So that was a good retribution there.
So they came back with a vengeance, because nothing says UCLA bloodthirsty rival like San Diego. So
of course. All right. University of San Diego, right. Not UC or San Diego State.
Right.
Men's water polo swept its way through the Inland Empire Classic on Saturday, defeating Redlands, Claremont Mud Scripps, how's that for a college name, and Whittier by a combined score of 66-7.
Claremont Mud Scripps is not one college. It's three colleges. Okay, well. It's three colleges that have pooled together their athletic teams because they are so small, and they combine for one water polo team.
That makes a lot of sense.
Despite their triple threat, it still didn't work out, and UCLA completely dominated them. With these early season tournaments, if they're not playing USC or Stanford, though, you really can't see it as anything.
Yeah, like they've dominated so far this season, but it's really hard to tell. I mean, they played USC in the scrimmage that the scores weren't really released, so we don't really know how that went.
And we will, of course, get to that later. Yeah,
of course. So
women's soccer returned home after a challenging road trip and beat San Diego State 2-0 on Friday.
Yeah, soccer. I think women's soccer. They played Duke, North Carolina. They played four ranked teams on the road, so it was a really tough stretch for them. So I'm sure they're glad to be home and get that win over San Diego State. Women's volleyball rebounded from last weekend's loss to Hawaii by winning all three of its matches at the Denver Invitational, beating Denver 3-0, Cal State Northridge 3-2, and Creighton 3-1.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed you put rebounded there because that's an obvious volleyball pun that you could have put in there, like dug themselves out of a hole or something that. You know what I mean? So next time with the script writing, we'll get a little bit better. We'll work our way into it. Not to sound condescending or anything, but I
apologize.
There are puns to be had. But anyway, congratulations to the women's volleyball team and their successes, digging themselves out of a hole. Football overcame a lackluster first half in Lincoln, Nebraska to defeat the Cornhuskers. That is not a word. Cornhuskers 41-21, scoring 38 straight points on the road to get the win. An impressive win by all measures for UCLA, and of course we'll talk about this win a lot later. It's really the central focus of our show.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get to that, though, we have a little bit of a update to do here. We had a few weeks ago a You Better Be Right pick, which we just touched on with men's water polo. We had decided to argue who would win between UCLA and USC in the Triton Invitational,
right,
which we were not aware was a scrimmage game and that the scores would not be recorded. So right. We have no way of determining who the victor of that was.
The score wasn't recorded, and you have your bench players coming in to get their minutes. It's like, it's basically like this, right? It's like comparing, it's like saying who's going to win between UCLA and USC, but instead of starting Brett Hundley at the last second, Jim Moore decides to give, Jerry Neuheisel and Mike Faithful their run. You know what, guys, you've really worked hard all season. I'm just going to throw you out there. Brett, I'm sorry, man, you got to sit on the sidelines for this game. So I think you know, it's not a true test, and it's not something we can judge, so we really can't do anything. But we have a new pick this week, and it is the New Mexico State game. And New Mexico State, which we'll touch on later, is a comically just terrible football team, right? They haven't had a winning season in recent memory, like in a very long time.
I think it's been since 2004. They haven't had more than four wins, I want to say.
Right,
exactly. So it's been a rough patch for them.
And currently Vegas, most Vegas sports betting lines have the game at either 42 or 42.5 points, right? So we're going to go with the higher of the two, 42.5. And it's going to be an over-under, okay, or I'm sorry, not over-under. Will UCLA cover the spread? And
I'm going to let you take this one first.
Okay. Yeah, since you take it first most times, but I will say UCLA covers the spread. I really think the Aggies are that terrible. I think they won't even be able to stop Jerry Neuheisel. I don't think they'll be able to stop any of UCLA's running backs. Granted, UCLA hasn't defeated a team by that margin or higher since Arizona of last year, but I believe, you know, wholeheartedly that Arizona is 15 times the team that New Mexico State is. So I think they can do it. It's just a matter of, do they let up at the end of the game or keep playing? I really don't think. I think they can definitely do it. It's just, how bad do they want to beat this team?
Yeah, I got to take the opposite side here. I think New Mexico State is going to win this one. JK, it's going to be close for the 42. It might be 41.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, 42 is a large margin. Getting to 42 points alone, that's what, six touchdowns? My
right.
math is correct.
Yeah, it's six.
And I mean, that's also assuming that New Mexico State doesn't score at all, which is possible. But with that, I mean, it's a lot of points to score, and I'm sure you're going to see some backups in there, as you mentioned, that maybe haven't had as much run together in the practice field and stuff. So I'll take the under.
So congratulations getting your times tables right there. Who is your second grade teacher so we can give her a
second
shout out?
Second grade teacher, how am I not remembering this? Mrs. Joyce.
Mrs. Joyce.
Tables weren't until third grade, I believe.
Wow, okay.
Mr. Fackler. I did not like Mr. Fackler.
Well, you know, we're kind of...
He snapped his kid's pencil in half because he was playing a paper. It was terrifying.
All right, well...
He's a mean guy.
Well, we'll let Kevin reminisce about his elementary school days later, but right now let's get into some football. Of course, I was in Lincoln, Nebraska with Tim Bradbury, who was taking photos for us. Really just a kind of a cool win for UCLA. Just, you know, you could see that it, although they wouldn't really admit it after the game, this was a very special win for them considering the recent loss of Nick Pasquale and how hard it was for them to kind of overcome that and really the emotions they were confronting before the game. It really took a toll on them in the first half.
Yeah, you could see him kind of start out sort of slow. It was just a sloppy first half in general. Brett Hundley had his first interception of the year and led to a touchdown for Nebraska. And things just didn't seem, I don't know, they just looked whatever the opposite of dull. I guess that's the opposite of sharp. It just wasn't a very pretty first half to watch. And as you mentioned, like they're not going to admit that it was because of the distraction of Nick Pasquale passing away, but that might have been a big part of it.
Yeah, you could see that Brett Hundley missed a few reads. I know Noel Mazzoni mentioned that. He saw Brett as being a little bit nervous, but I think with a few minutes to go in the first half, you know, Taylor Martinez had his way with UCLA's defense really all day with Kenny Bell and Nunwa, who had, you know, kind of just put the icing on the cake with the jump over Randall Goforth to score their second touchdown. But yeah, I mean, Nebraska started off hot, and I expected that too, given, you know, the emotions and everything, but right before their second-to-last drive of the half, Jim Mora, you know, comes into the huddle and says, "Hey, guys, listen, I know we're getting beat pretty bad right now. I know it looks bad on the scoreboard, but just relax. You know, play our game, take a deep breath, and have fun, because that's the point of the game." You know, whether he really said that or not, I don't know. But I think he said something along those lines, because UCLA was the better team. They had, you know, the better weapons and that kind of thing. And once you saw this team start to settle down and find its rhythm, it was really no turning back.
Yeah, really, and that rhythm, as you mentioned, started coming with about 6 or 7 minutes left in the first half. The Bruins started putting a drive together, I think. Was it Jordan James got the first touchdown, or was that
It was Paul Perkins, okay. But really the drive kind of materialized because of a Brett Hundley play with his legs.
Yeah.
You know, they quickly dug themselves into, a 3rd-and-12 situation.
Something like that.
The crowd was on its feet. You could kind of sense that maybe this is it for UCLA. Like, the momentum could be permanently shifted in Nebraska's favor if, you know, there was a punt or a turnover on downs. And Brett Hundley avoids two defensive ends, rolls out to his right, beats an outside linebacker, and gets a 13-yard gain to get a first down. They had a huge completion after that to, I believe, Devin Fuller, and then like two plays later, Paul Perkins scores the touchdown. So right away, you could sense that, all right, this team's ready. Once this, if they get a stop starting in the second half, this is going to be a UCLA advantage pretty quickly.
Yeah, it was a really pretty dramatic turn of events. The momentum wise, you can just feel it completely watching it. How Nebraska just kind of fell flat from that point on. And I mean, everything. Did UCLA even punt at all in the second half or from that point on? It just felt like every single drive they had was just everything was clicking, and they just put first down after first down together. And
yeah, yeah. And with Jim Mora talking after the game, he really said, and we have a clip of this, that UCLA didn't make too many adjustments at all.
The quarter and a half of the game is that we were trying so hard. We were trying so hard to make something happen good that we were tight. And we came in, well, really what happened is in the second quarter there at the end, we kind of relaxed, we made some plays, and we kind of found our rhythm again. And we came in at halftime, not a lot of adjustments that had to be made, really just an adjustment in our mindset, which was to relax, play with confidence, go out and have fun, enjoy the game, and let it roll. We tried to pick up the tempo a little bit on offense. We talked about tackling better on defense. We talked about containing the quarterback a little bit better on defense, but there was no, you know, mystical, magical X's and O's. It was all our players just doing what they're supposed to do and really loving what they do, which is playing football.
And it, as you talked about in this clip, it was really kind of the players taking the initiative and saying, listen, guys, you know, we know how to play this game. We're way too tense right now. We just kind of need to do the things that we do, get back into our high-powered offense, you know, fast-paced and everything, and we have this team figured out. And once they scored that first touchdown and set themselves up for another field goal, they missed the field goal at the end of the half, but you could tell they started to believe in themselves a little bit more offensively, defensively. You could see the corners starting to play tighter coverage in the second half, and really it was just kind of an all-out dominating effort from that point.
Yeah, the one thing that surprised me really was Taylor Martinez in the first half looked on the top of his game, passing-wise. His mechanics looked really great. He didn't have to rely on his legs at all. They got three touchdowns in the first half. Second half, though, he just completely disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I can't diagnose what happened. Did you see something that changed? And was it the Bruins' defense?
We asked Anthony Barr after the game if he saw that Taylor Martinez was shaken up, because they really got in his face a lot more in the second half, whether it was the offensive line of Nebraska getting tired or UCLA's defensive line just, you know, outmanning them. I don't know. But he said he really couldn't tell if Martinez was just flustered. Maybe just the corners were covering the routes better, the safeties were better over top. But also we saw Anthony Barr kind of, you know, he was nowhere to be found in the first half, and then all of a sudden just sprints onto the scene, made the vast majority of his 11, I think it was 11, vast majority of his 11 tackles in that second half, and had two of his three forced fumbles in the half. So kind of an all-out dominating effort by him. You saw Miles Jack on the other outside linebacker position really prove himself in the second half too, and there were a ton of three and outs, so there was really no getting going for that offense, if anything.
Yeah, it was just really, I mean, if you talk about being stuck in a rut, that's, Nebraska showed what that means, and to do that, when you have your whole fan base, like 91,000 people there cheering you on, and to not be able to put a single first down together for
right.
a lot of the, I mean, that's just really surprising that they couldn't really feed off that energy. So that just really goes to show how far or how dominant of a second half that was for UCLA.
Yeah, and throughout this game, we saw the theme of Nick Pasquale kind of playing itself out and how the team remembered him and played for him. And before the game, and this has been something that Mora and the players have said was incredibly classy, Nebraska student section had these signs saying end number 36 and two schools, one team, I think, and
yeah,
just kind of honoring him. And then they have this tradition where after Nebraska's first touchdown, they release 250 red balloons. But instead, during the moment of silence they had for Nick before the game, they released blue and yellow balloons just to kind of honor him. And they cheered UCLA when they came out for pregame warm-ups and right before the game. And just all around, kind of it showed the class of Nebraska's fan base. And I can attest to that, too, having met a lot of these people and hearing what they had to say.
Yeah, just really that's like the great part of sports is when there's something like emotional like this and people can put aside rivalries or put aside animosity against each other for being opposing fan bases and really just kind of the humanity that comes out of it. That was a really great job by Nebraska, just being so welcoming and so compassionate about the whole tragedy that happened.
And I think it's true of Nebraska's fan base in particular. They always cheer, as we talked to Kyle Cummings last week, they always cheer for opposing teams as they take the field or leave the field. They, you know, they don't really speak very, you know, they don't speak ill of other teams. I think I was talking to another UCLA beat writer who was watching the game from the stands with his wife, that the worst thing they said was, "Hey, we hope you don't win." Like,
and, how rude.
Yeah, how rude of them to say that. And then, you know, just even around town, people were, you know, saw that I don't know, that I was like, I wasn't even wearing anything UCLA, but just would ask, just walk up to you and
just
ask,
like an LA boy,
yeah, are
Hollywood
you,
kid.
Right, are you in town for the game? Like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry to hear about the loss, even, you know, and, oh, congrats on, you know, covering the game or whatever. It's just that niceness, I guess, and that reputation is something that they take pride in, because football is Nebraska's thing. You know, if you drive around, there's a lot of cornfields, there's a lot of nothing for a while, but they know their football and they love their football, and you can definitely tell that from not only the actions they had, but just their attitudes in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and we also got the sense of, and well, we have another clip here, that the kind of the idea of winning for Nick was something that the team took a little bit differently, and each of them kind of thought about it in a different way.
In the morning before we went out on the field for practice, and Mel and Lori and AJ, that's his mother and his father and his brother, they were amazing, and I think they gave our team strength. So, you know, you don't ever want to say you won one for somebody. We didn't win one for Nick. What we try to do today is just go out and play with the type of effort and enthusiasm and energy and passion for the game that would reflect what he meant to us, and that his parents could see it on TV and recognize that we were playing the game like their son played the game. We got to win. And
yeah, and you know, Mora, he talked about we didn't necessarily win for Nick. We won for kind of representing who he was as a football player, and the toughness and the spirit that he embodied as somebody who was a part of our team. And I thought that was an interesting take on it, because you always hear whenever there's a loss, or you know, there's somebody that isn't a part of the program anymore that's crushing, you know, it's a crushing loss for the team, you always want to say like win for that person. But today he kind of talked about, I didn't want to set them up for failure, where if, you know, win or lose, you know, we want to play our best game. But if you say let's win for Nick and then you aren't fortunate enough to win the game, it's almost like you're letting that person down, which isn't fair to put on a, you know, 19 or 20 year old kid, that, you know, the weight of the world in that sense. It's not necessarily fair. And so I think by saying that, he's setting them up for a situation where, of course, we want to win at all costs, but if we lose, it's not, you know, you're hurting this person's spirit.
Yeah, that's always seemed like a kind of awkward sort of challenge a coach puts on his team. It's like, win for this guy. Because, I mean, if you don't, then that just makes you feel doubly bad for losing and for letting someone down. So yeah, I think that's a really great take that Mora put on it. And it really, I mean, it's a testament and an honor to Nick as well, by play as hard as he would have played, challenging his team to go that way rather than win for him, but play as if he had the way he would have, I think is a really great spin on it to kind of show how hard a player he was or how hard a worker he was too.
Yeah, you could get the sense that a lot of guys had different reactions to it. I know Anthony Jefferson said, you know, he was my guy, this is what I wanted. And Anthony Barr said, I really wish he would have been on the sidelines, he would have been going crazy. And, you know, it was fitting that we came from behind. It was fitting because that's the kind of player he was, a gritty person who never complained and you know, always worked for what he got. So, you know, I think they handled this week just as well as any team could have. Obviously very difficult, but they came in there and they got their win, and a pretty convincing win.
Yeah, absolutely. And transitioning now to our somewhat new segment, Webster's Sports. I'm not sure, where did we get that title from?
The Merriam-Webster's Dictionary.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Should it be like Merriam-Webster's Sports?
Yeah, I think...
Dictionary.com?
I'm just going to shorten it and leave it short.
I'll allow it. All right, anyways, this week's question, let's recap what this is. The segment is, we have a single word that defines what our topic is going to be. So this week's topic is, what single word would you use to describe UCLA's win against Nebraska? So again, I will let you do the honors first.
I think it's promising. I think that UCLA showed they can beat a top 25 team in their home environment in front of 91,000 screaming fans and really face that much adversity and still come out with a win, I think it says a lot about what this team's potential is. This was a game where they really faced their first adversity against Nevada. They kind of, even though they kind of didn't play that well in the first half, they never trailed. They didn't throw any interceptions. They only had one turnover, and it was the very end of the game. But this game, they had a turnover early on. They trailed by 18 points toward the end of the first half, but they still managed to come back. Granted, if they do that against a team like Oregon, they're going to get their heads beat in. It's not going to be easy for them against every single team, but it shows they maybe could compete with a Stanford, and if they play a perfect game, maybe compete against Oregon. Who knows? But we see that this is a team that, you know, they're now ranked 13th in the country. The rest of the nation sees them as a promising team. Can they live up to that? I don't know, but they show some promise.
My word is going to be unsettling. Ooh. In the sense that the first half was very unsettling for, I mean, if they're, like as you mentioned, with Oregon, playing Oregon, if they can just, I mean, the lack of cohesiveness with the entire offense and defense, I guess, just nothing seemed to click. And if they fall into slumps like that throughout the year, that's going to be something that's going to plague them. But also unsettling for opponents as well, just seeing that second half, 38 straight points against a Nebraska team that is a good team. Just shows how potent this team can be. So unsettling for the Bruins in that they can be inconsistent, it looks like, at times, and unsettling for everyone that they play that this team you got to watch out for.
All right, kind of a little a fire lit under the behinds of the UCLA football team by Absolutely. Kevin Bowman. So go ahead and tweet at either of us and tell us who won. I think we kind of know, wink wink, who won that little exchange right there, but. Anyway, yeah, we very much enjoy this segment. I think it helps both of our vocabularies, and it's something we will try to continue in the future.
Absolutely.
All right, and so now moving into a brief preview. This is actually the first time we're not dealing with a bye situation. So we have a wrap of the game and then a preview for the upcoming game. UCLA will take on the New Mexico State Aggies on Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. at the Rose Bowl. And Kevin, what's your take on this game?
Well, as we mentioned, New Mexico State's kind of terrible. Not to be subjective at all.
By kind of, we mean very. So
yeah, so it's going to be a nice opportunity for some of the younger players to get some time. it's not going to be, like, I think it's going to be a blowout, as we mentioned before. It's going to be maybe kind of ugly for New Mexico State fans. We don't want UCLA to, or we don't want, UCLA doesn't want to get ahead of itself and just notch it down as a win, but it pretty much is. So it's just going to be a nice chance to showcase the offense and get some highlight reel plays.
Yeah, a little B-roll for when they're talking about him on ESPN.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Brett Hundley mentioned that anytime you walk into a game, you want to respect that team. Granted, they may not look the best on film. They may not have the most talented players, but these are guys that earn scholarships. These are guys that play week to week, and they have UCLA on their schedule. So while I don't think it's an any given Saturday thing where New Mexico State could come into the Rose Bowl and pull out a crazy victory against UCLA, it could be close, which would look bad for UCLA. I know we saw Michigan
and Akron,
almost drop one at home against Akron. But that being said, I think there's just too much of a difference in talent between these teams. Even if UCLA plays its worst half, if it plays two first halves from the Nebraska game, scores aside, I think they still probably come away with the win in this game.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned how terrible this Aggies team is. Do you know why? Do you have like a diagnosis for what this team is doing wrong for all these years?
I mean, I don't know if they're doing anything wrong. It's just
not the most appealing place to play.
Right. Las Cruces, New Mexico, no offense to Las Cruces, isn't like the most exciting place to play in the world. If you're a really sound, solid player in Texas or Oklahoma or Arizona or California, you're going to go to the major schools in those states. You're going to go to the Arizona States, the Arizonas, Texas, A&M, UCLA, USC, Stanford, if you're so, you know,
academically inclined,
exactly. But yeah, it's just not the most appealing place to play. They're getting probably 3-star recruits max. And it's just I think it's kind of a talent thing, and it kind of shows in the records they have. 2005, we mentioned 0-12. 2006, 4-8. 2007, 4-9. 2008, 3-9. 2009, 3-10. 2010, 2-10. 2011, 4-9. And last year, they were 1-11.
Yeah, so a lot of those second numbers are pretty high.
Right, and in this year, they're already off to an 0-3 start. I don't know if they're like losing control of their team, but it can't be fun week after week to come into a Texas or Minnesota. Last week it was against UTEP, and they lost by like 21 points, and they've lost by consistently 20 points every game. So while that's not to say they won't come out and be competitive and, you know, give their best effort, I would, you know, you don't ever say a team doesn't come in and try its hardest. It's just hard to compete when the product of the other team's, you know, the other team's floor is higher than your ceiling.
Yeah, and I mean, we've mentioned with Akron and Michigan too how there's, well, Michigan has its fair share of these against. There's Akron and there's the Appalachian State against them too. So there's teams that obviously aren't at the same player talent level or recruiting level that can still pull off these upsets. So even if New Mexico State might not have the same caliber of players and UCLA is on a roll and looks like it's going to blow them out, you never know what could happen. And as you mentioned, that Brett Huntley mentioned that these are all scholarship players, so UCLA has to keep that in mind and make sure that they're not just taking it lightly.
Right, and it's their last game before heading to their first Pac-12 road test of the season in Utah, so they might as well take advantage of it. If you come out and you're sloppy and, hey, you know, we're rolling over this team and it's New Mexico State and, all right, we're 3-0, we're still ranked in the top 25, then you could come out to Utah the week after that and just get your, you know, I don't want to cuss here, but get destroyed by a team like Utah. Mm-hmm. You thought I was going to say something, didn't you?
Not at all, no.
All right. Anyway, you don't want to come out and, you know, get destroyed by a team like Utah and start your Pac-12 season off 0-1 just because you didn't take the game before seriously. So it's about New Mexico State, but it's also about the start of your Pac-12 season to, you know, because the Utah game's a Thursday night game, it'll sneak up on them a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so they don't want to come out and, you know, have a dud against a bad team and get the win and then have a worse game against an even better team.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's it's not a big game in the sense that Nebraska was, but it's definitely every game that they play is an important one, and they'll have to bring their A game. And I mean, it's also a great opportunity for them to show the voters, the poll voters, what they can do to a lesser opponent that always looks good when you have like an 82-0 score, as Oregon can attest to, I'm sure.
Right.
So, I mean, there's always that too. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it was funny because you mentioned that, because today in the press conference they talked about, is UCLA the Oregon of the Pac-12 South? And Mora kind of quickly brushed it away with we're just little UCLA trying to get better week to week. So I think that'll be their goal this week, is to try to get better, try to fix up some of the things. Like, I know they had a fumbled punt last week. They had an interception from Hundley. Hopefully for them, there's a quarterback there in, well, the name escapes me now, but hopefully for them, they have a quarterback that challenges them over the top, and they make a couple mistakes so they can tighten those things up for the Utah game.
Absolutely.
Any other thoughts, Kevin, for you coming into this New Mexico State game?
I mean, not about New Mexico State, but keep an eye out on Sunday. Our registration issue hits the stands. It's going to be cool. Or as Brett Hundley would say, turnt up. So stay tuned for, or not stay tuned, but like, pick that up. Please
stay tuned in. It turned up just like Lincoln was on Saturday.
Absolutely.
Night. Right. So for all of us here with Out of Bounds and Daily Bruin Sports on UCLAradio.com, thanks for stopping by, and we will see you next week.